Blog Talk Radio.
Billing guys, tonight's topic we're gonna talk about the challenge to do business with one another. I got brother K Moose on the phone, brother Vernon and Sister Gidget. Brother Vernon Muhammad is of the Freedom Paper, COLLC. Talk about financial freedom, the economic freedom movement, principles of business. Corporate cooperative economics needed. Will the original people survive economically? That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. If you have any questions, you can push one on your chat, and I'll see you guys. I'm Brother DJ Black Caesar, so I'll see you guys with the questions, and I'll call on you. I see we got a lot of people tuning in now, so it's going to be a great show right here. And I'm going to open up the floors and let Sister Gidget take it away. What's up, Sister Gidget?
Assalamu alaikum, Brother DJ Black Caesar. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Sister. Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, sir. You know, I want to start off by saying good evening to our listening audience. Assalamu alaikum to my nation of Islam and nation building family and Muslims all over the world. And I would like to also give the greetings to my distinguished panel here today. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Kamus and Brother Vernon.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Gidget, and wa alaikum salam to the family out there in the listening audience. And Ramadan Mubarak.
And Ramadan Kareem, sir. All right, we're going to get right into it. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that the original people of the earth must do for self. And more recently, I heard the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan state that we should not ask others to do for us what we can surely do for ourselves. And the institutions of higher learning are teaching us how to be a paid slave, so to speak, in their industries. But I feel that we have to take what we have or what we get from them, take the teachings that have been taught to us, and build a new nation for ourselves. So today, my brothers, I'm thinking that's what you all are going to be talking about. And the first thing I want to get off into is the challenge. So, Brother Kamus, if you would, tell us about the challenge and remind us about the challenge that you issued last week. And then I'm going to have you and Brother Vernon introduce yourselves. Not last week, last time you were here. I'm sorry. Issue the challenge again, because I'm going to have you reissue it later. But go ahead and issue the challenge again, if you would.
Yes, ma'am. Once again, assalamu alaikum. And thank you, Sister Gidget and DJ Black Caesar, for allowing myself and Brother Vernon back on the show. We really appreciate it. And the challenge is something we talked about during the last show, because, you know, we talk a lot about the economic realities that we're facing. We talk a lot about those of us who consider ourselves conscious people, and those certainly who are following the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, those who say they might follow the teachings of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, those who say they follow Malcolm X, those who say they follow any of the great worthies that taught about economics. We're issuing a challenge today, because talk is cheap. The Holy Quran says lip service accounts for nothing. And so the challenge is, can we put our words into action? Can we put our teachings into action? Are we really conscious enough now to begin to do something? And that something is, we're challenging everyone to buy from black business. We're saying buy from Freedom Paper Company. We're going to talk about what that is and why we should do that. But any and all black businesses, we should be supporting. And hopefully we're going to talk about why we should do that during the show. We're going to talk about why we don't do that. But the challenge is to get us to do it. And we're saying for just 6 months. We really want to say a year. I got to say that, Sister Gidget. We want to say a year, but that might seem too long. What we're hoping, though, is we'll develop some habits. And so we're issuing the challenge now for just 6 months, starting after this call. Starting after this call for 6 months, all of our dollars should be found going into a black business first, a black business first. And for those who say, well, I can't find any black businesses to support, we got something for you this evening. We're going to help you with that, because this isn't the first time this challenge has been issued, but we're going to issue it again today. And so the challenge, again, is to put our dollars where, behind our mouths, behind our words, behind the knowledge we claim we have, the consciousness we say we have. We're asking us today to put our dollars behind that.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And thank you, Brother Kamus. And so, since you're already talking, introduce yourself to us again and let us know who you are and what you do.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Brother Kamus Muhammad. I'm out of the city of Baltimore, Maryland, the great mosque number 6 in the Nation of Islam. I am the chief executive officer of Freedom Paper Company. I am one who is sitting by Allah's permission and grace, over what we call the Committee for the Development of the National Ministry of Trade and Commerce of the Nation of Islam, which started back in 2009. I do have other posts in the nation as well, but that's who I am, and that's why we're here today, to talk about trade and commerce, to talk about economics, to talk about the Economic Freedom Movement and Freedom Paper Company.
Yes, sir. And we also have one of Nation Building's own, our beloved, beautiful Brother Vernon. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Vernon. Introduce yourself, even though most of us know you already. Introduce yourself anyway and tell us who you are and what you do.
Wa alaikum salam, good Sister Gidget, DJ Black Caesar. So thankful to be with you all tonight. I am Vernon Muhammad. I work with CEO Brother Kamos Muhammad and a host of other wonderful, willing, and able people. My capacity and the capacity that I serve is Director of Marketing Activities. I'm taking a large portion of responsibility for making sure that the word gets out about what freedom is about, what we have in store for you all, and I'm so thankful that you would allow us back to speak with your audience and to make sure that the good work that we're trying to do on so many fronts is put out there on Front Street, and that more and more people are able to find out about how they can get involved and exactly what we have in store for them. So I'm honored. I'm excited to be here tonight. My heart is a little bit heavy, I must confess, because in the last 24 hours I've been receiving constant reminders about how and why we need to have empowered individuals and empowered businesses in our community and throughout our community, so that in times of need, in times where the forces need to be rallied and gathered together, we have the necessary muscle and power that is needed to make things happen. And perhaps later as we get on into the show, I'll be able to discuss and share some of what's come to light over the last 24 hours. But I'm excited. We're getting ready to do some good things. And this challenge is real. So for all of you who like to talk about it, after today's show, we will have the opportunity to be about it.
Yes, sir. And thank you, Brother Vernon. So, Brother Kamos, do you want to share with us the history of the Freedom Paper Company right quick, so we can get more familiar with what Freedom Paper Company is and, you know, what your products are?
Absolutely. Freedom Paper Company is born out of the mind of God, we believe, coming directly from that which occurred in 1995. And we all should know exactly what that is. And, of course, that is the Million Man's March. And we might remember at the Million Man's March that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave us a pledge to read. And I want to just take a moment, Sister Gidget, just to read a small portion of that pledge, because this is where it all starts. And for anybody who happened to be at the Million Man March, or even for those who were looking at it live on television, those who had family members going there, the spirit that existed that day is a spirit that will live in our hearts for time indefinite. But I want to read something of the pledge we took. It says, I pledge that from this day forward, I will strive to love my brother as I love myself. And from this day forward, I strive to improve myself spiritually, morally, mentally, socially, politically, and economically for the benefit of myself, my family, and my people. I pledge that I will strive to build businesses, build houses, build hospitals, build factories, and enter into international trade for the good of myself, my family, and my people. So this was the pledge that many, almost 2,000 men took on that day, 1995, March 16th, 1995, the Million Man March. Well, 10 years later, 2005, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan announced the Million Moors Movement. And in the Million Moors movement, it was designed to move us further along to the fulfillment of our pledge, because in it was the designation of 9 key ministries, which were formulated like the human body in the 9 systems of the human body. And if we imagine and look at the human body, we know that if any one of those systems were vacant, then the body could not function as well. And so a group of us in 2009, with the call of Brother Dr. Aleem Muhammad at that year's Savior's Day 2009, when he called out for individuals who were interested in all of those 9 ministries, and there were workshops, we began to come together. A small group of us, 35 individuals from across the nation, began to work and develop that which we call the Committee for the Development of the National Ministry of Trade and Commerce. Now, out of this, we began to work immediately, and we began to organize. And so we had many things going on in that year of 2009, with our first national convention in Memphis, Tennessee, during the Holy Day of Atonement. And then we moved right along to 2010 at Tampa, where we began to gather data and information about what businesses are really working, in particular in the Nation of Islam. But we have been gathering these statistics about businesses all across the country and even internationally. So when we move right along just before 2011, when we were blessed to be one of the workshops chosen out of the 16 workshops to be given the opportunity to present at 2011's Savior's Day event, we in that Ministry of Trade and Commerce began to ask those who were participating, what do we need to do to develop a business that will begin to address the concerns and issues that are going on among us as a people? We knew we had to do something phenomenal. Looking at the condition of our people, the original people on the planet, actually, we have no major business entities anymore. And so when we look around, we used to have BET. We used to have Johnson & Johnson Publications. We used to have Beatrice Foods. We used to have a number of other entities that were major corporations, even doing international business. But today, all of these corporations have now been brought out. The shareholder ownership of those are no longer majority black. And so we have no longer any black institutions that we really can call our own. Even many of the black banks that have an opportunity to be on a large scale from a majority ownership basis are really not black owned. And so we looked around and we began to study as a think tank, if you will, as a development group, an economic development group coming out of trade and commerce, what could we do? And as we studied a number of different types of businesses, a number of different things that we looked into, we began to look into the paper industry. And we realized that this was a sleeping giant that could really begin to develop into something phenomenal with not just mom and pop type of implications, but implications that would begin to have the potential to resolve the myriad of troubles and problems that we are facing economically. And thus, Freedom Paper Company was born. And it was born right from the prescription of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, where he tells us to pool our resources to do so. He tells us in Message to the Black Man that we should begin to come together to pool our resources financially, intellectually, and spiritually to begin to develop. So that's what we did. And that, Sister Gidget, is the formation and the beginning of Freedom Paper Company.
Okay. So I'm listening to you. I'm listening to the origin of the Freedom Paper Company. But let's just say right now we have some young entrepreneurs out there, or we have some people who have been displaced from their employment situation. And just quickly, if you could, Brother Kamos, if anybody is really just talking about really doing for self, going in business for self, give me 5 key things that they need to do.
5 key things. Well, number one, anybody going into business must first realize the serious nature of being in business. If we looked at the statistics for businesses in general, and this would be any business regardless of the ownership of the business. So this would be businesses owned by Caucasians, businesses owned by black people, etc. If we looked at the statistics tell us that within the first 5 years, 80% of all small businesses fail. So when we look at a statistic like that, that's telling us something. So anybody going into business, number one, must understand that the pursuit of business is a very serious proposition. As a matter of fact, we teach in our training class for those who are becoming independent distributors of Freedom Paper Company that there's nothing more comparable to being in business than, you know, being married or having children. And for those who happen to be married or those who have children, you know that that's something that you are 24/7 thinking about, 24/7 concerned about, 24/7 on your job and taken care of. Well, if you go into business, you have to be ready to take that kind of a challenge. So that's number one. Number two, I would say that we should look into what we like. What are our skills and talents? What are the things that we're good at? We wouldn't want to take up something that is totally foreign to us. So we might want to start most feasibly with something that we're good at or something, some skill set that we've been trained in. That would be number two. Number three, we want to do some research. And we want to look at what we're thinking about going into, because there are a number of dynamics that we need to think about. We don't want to trick ourselves into believing that just because we start a business, we open a door, we open a storefront, that people will automatically come. That's not going to happen, generally speaking. So we have to understand that there's particular work and particular things we need to know to go into it. And then would come number four, which would be the development of a business plan. Too often, just on the basis of our energy, which is absolutely needed, we must be energized if we're going to go into business. We must believe in what we're going to do. But if we're going to be business people and we're going to go into business, we must also have a plan. God himself plans. The Holy Quran says, God, Allah, is the best of planners. So Allah does not do anything himself without planning. We would be silly and foolish to believe that we could simply go into business on a whim, on an idea. Even if the idea is good, we must absolutely have a plan. And then number five, we must be ready to face the challenges, and we must build the will power of ourselves to overcome that which we will evidently run into. Because, again, if 80% of all business fails, that tells us that this is not an easy proposition. This is not for the weak or the timid. This is for those who have a desire and the will to be successful and to overcome challenges. So those would be five things, Sister Gidget, that I would say, you know, we really need to look at before starting off to be entrepreneurs.
Yes, sir. And so just give us a basic figure. I know it, of course, depends on what kind of business that you're going into. But let's just say if you want to do a small business, whether it's you're a graphic artist or whether you want to sell paper goods like what you're doing, whatever it is, how much startup money should a person have as startup money, and how much reserve should they have?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to give an actual figure. And it really would depend on the type of business that a person would go into. But there have been some things that are quoted for business people to think about. And one of those that in my early career, I have been in business myself as an entrepreneur for over 20 years in various aspects of business, everything from being a construction manager and owning a construction company, from retail sales, real estate sales, etc. But one of the things that is taught is to have monies that would be equivalent to 6 months' capital to run your business and to take care of your expenses without necessarily having to go into the actual profits of the business. That would be a general rule of thumb, if you will, to look at, but to really think about. Now, you know, we can variate that maybe to 3 months, but certainly I would say that you should never go into business without having at least 3 months, but 6 months probably is the better marker for us to think about having in terms of capital reserves before we would go into business.
Okay. All right. And Brother Kamos, we're going to let you rest for a minute because I know Brother Vernon is over there just chilling, and he think he's not going to work this evening. Brother Vernon.
Brother Vernon is always working.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let me ask you a question, Brother Vernon. As it stands today, where are we really going? And I mean, as a people, where are we really going financially? And where do you see us as a whole financially as a people in the next 5 years?
Wow. That is an excellent question. And I'll draw on two real giants in the field of economics. As it relates to Black people too, who are on the horizon, really, really crying out as clearly as possibly can be. One, I'll start with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who at the Holy Day of Atonement anniversary of the Million Man March, 2011 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, made it as clear as possibly as possible when he said, warfare, and in case you didn't know, we are at war. He said the survival of Black people is at stake. Okay, so it's our position, and our position as it relates to economics, as it relates to the proportion of business entities that exist within our community, and the frequency with which the dollar circulates in our community, which we all know it doesn't circulate that much. All of those are critical, vital signs to let us know what we're dealing with and exactly where we are in terms of economic empowerment, economic health, and being in a general overall good condition economically as a whole. There are millionaires, sure, we can point to any basketball player, we can point to any sports figure. You can look at the giants in our community like Oprah Winfrey and Bob Johnson and various other millionaires and even billionaires in our community. But as a whole, Black people, the Black community, and people of color throughout America are in dire straits. And as we've all heard, the gap between the haves and the have-nots is only getting wider. So once again, I'll echo that wake-up call. In case you didn't know, we are at war. Okay, business is warfare, and we are taking heavy casualties because we don't have the necessary institutions and stable bodies in place in our community to make sure that finance and economics stays and benefits the community. Everything that we make, bring back home from a paycheck or whatever we earn, goes right back out with who we spend our money with, because by and large, they're not from our community. They don't stay in our community. They don't contribute on a significant enough level in our community. So that's one aspect or one credible source that gave what I would consider to be a very accurate viewpoint of what our condition is. And another credible and reputable source is Dr. Claude Anderson, who's the former Undersecretary for Trade and Commerce under the Jimmy Carter administration. For those of you who don't know him, he wrote several books. One is called Black Labor, White Wealth, which details just that, how no matter what amount of toil and effort we put in, all of the monies can be traced back to or flow back to eventually white hands, white pockets, white community, things that people that don't benefit us. He also wrote a book more recently called Powernomics, and he's been doing a series of lectures over the past few years dealing specifically with the condition of Black people in America. And one thing that he said that is very, very, I don't want to say alarming, I want to say it's a very sobering and eye-opening statement. He's been making this statement for several years, but here we are now in 2012, finding ourselves in the condition we're in. And what he's been saying up to this point is that if black people don't get it together and get something going for ourselves economically by the year 2013, we are going to be a permanent underclass in this country. That means you will not be able to turn the boat around because the social engineering that has taken place up to this point, just like we heard about in the Willie Lynch philosophy and theory that has been espoused, has been set in place to be perpetual so that for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years, we know that by remaining in these conditions, we will stay in these conditions generation after generation after generation. So we have a window of opportunity. There is a little bit of time left for us to get our act together, stop finding reasons to be divided, stop letting enemies of our rise and of our unity work on us to keep us divided, and make no excuses to put ourselves on the right road to recovery and prosperity. We can do that, but we have to take ourselves seriously. We have to be willing to accept the challenge, step up to the plate, and do what needs to be done. And that's why we're on the air tonight.
Yes, sir. So, in your opinion, Brother Vernon, do you encourage those students that are coming out of the higher institutions of learning, so to speak, with bachelor degrees or with doctorate degrees, do you encourage them to go right into business, or do you encourage them to work in the industry? And if so, for how long should they work in the industry before considering going into their own business?
I think in line with what Brother Camo said earlier, until you have a solid plan to strike out on your own, you're probably not in the best position to strike out on your own. So up until that point, and this has been echoed by a lot of greats in the finance world and people who advise others on how to change their economic and financial position in the world as well. Robert Kiyosaki is one person who said, anytime that you realize you need to learn, go and take that job with the intention to learn what you need to learn to benefit yourself in the future, okay? He talked about how he started out with a job at Xerox where he was doing sales. He was I don't know if it was a door-to-door salesman, but he was a salesman for Xerox. And he said what he was there for was to acquire a skill. He wanted to learn the art and the skill of sales. So until he had mastered that, it was necessary for him to take a job. I assume that if he could have stepped out on his own and done well for himself, then he probably would have done that. But it showed great wisdom to say, okay, if I am not able to take that stand on my own, let me go where I can acquire knowledge to benefit myself and benefit a greater mission than myself, and do that for the time that I have to do. The beauty, as a matter of fact, another place where we saw that is right in the great book by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Message to the Black Man in America, where he lays out an economic blueprint. And one of those great chapters in that book was Acquire Knowledge to Benefit Self and Kind. He specifically talked about that. Any living day that you have is a day that you can gather and garner the skills that you will need in the future so that you will be able to stand on your own and do an effective job. But until you do that, it's wise to know when you need to put yourself in a learning position. So don't shoot yourself in the foot and think that the only option that you have is just to make your stand and stand alone, stand on your own. You have to understand your terrain, understand what resources are in your environment so that you can use them properly to build up and benefit yourself. If we were fortunate enough to have a legacy that was left to us, where corporate training and you know, legacy attendance to Wharton School of Business and the Harvard School of Business and all of that was just gifted to us and part of the norm for how we matriculate on through, that would be great. We can just step out there, graduate with our bachelor's, and come away knowing that we've got what it takes. Unfortunately, most of the higher institutions of learning now don't educate, they train. You're not educated in those institutions, which means you're not put in an environment where what's naturally in you is honed and groomed so that you can be dropped anywhere in the world and step out and establish and stand on your own from the time that you hit freshman year orientation to the time that you walk across the stage and get your degree. You're told that you need to wait and hope that someone will give you something to do. So until we can get ourselves in that mindset in the college environment that you already know what you want to do and you're there to acquire that knowledge to benefit yourself and your kind, you may have a hard way to go, but we're working to change that as we speak.
Yes, sir. And Brother Camos, you know, we send our children to these higher institutions of learning, but we also know as parents that we have a responsibility in their education. Should we not be grooming them to be entrepreneurs at home prior to going to college? What you think about that, Brother Camos?
Yes, ma'am. You know, Sister Gidget, before I answer that question, and that is a very, very important topic that we need to discuss and how all of these things are actually interrelated, I want to just take a moment to horsey back, you know, not piggyback. We're not going to piggyback today, but we're going to horsey back off of what Brother Vernon was saying because, you know, at this moment in the show, everyone who is listening should really look in the mirror. You know, oftentimes when we hear lectures or we hear information like this, we might think of this in sort of a way outside of ourselves. But I want everyone who is listening to look in the mirror and think about yourself and the impact of things on yourself, on your family, on your children, of all of our actions and what we are doing or not doing. For all of us, again, who think we or feel that we are conscious, that we have some knowledge, that we have some wisdom and some understanding, we have to begin to really look in the mirror and ask ourselves some vital questions based upon the things that Brother Vernon talked about that he quoted were being said by the most honorable, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and by Dr. Claude Anderson. That's very, very important. He said that if we did not do something of a great and serious nature as a people, by 2013, that we would become a permanent underclass. Now, that's not something to take lightly at all. Now, we know that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been teaching us this all along. He told us that there would come a time that the white man would not have any jobs for us. He told us that. Now, we're living and seeing these things take place. I want to just very quickly give us some actual statistics. So we can begin, as we're looking in the mirror, to understand the great need to take action today and why we're issuing this challenge in the first place, because action is needed. There was an article in the Final Call newspaper a few years back, and it talked about the condition that we were in economically. It said that if things continue to go on as they are going on today, in other words, the movement or really the lack of movement that we're making economically as a people. It said that some scholars said that it would take 537 years for us to reach economic equity with Caucasians. Did you hear what I said? 537 years. So the question is, can we do anything about that? The answer is absolutely yes, but we must take action. We must begin to work toward our own survival and not against our survival. And we got to understand that every time we're spending dollars with other than self, especially when we do that first, that what we are inevitably doing is sentencing ourselves, sentencing our children, sentencing our people to death economically. And death economically is death in every other way. We can talk about that, especially when we talk about this educational question. Let me give just a couple other statistics. These statistics are coming from CBSNews.com, CRMVet.com, BlackRadioNetwork.com. Now, it stated, and we picked up these statistics last year, they're reflecting back to statistics as far back as 2010, but we know some of this is even worse today. It said in America that the current rate of poverty for black people as a whole was at 26%. We're talking nationwide now. And we've done some statistics in different areas, and that statistic can be found worse in certain states and in certain cities. For black women, 26.5%. The poverty rate for black children, 35% overall. Now that's the poverty rate for black children. For children 15 years and under, 37%. Now, listen to this. The poverty rate for our children under 15 is 37% compared to white children at only 10%. So now we're looking at the diversity of these statistics, and we see the great seriousness of us doing something about our present condition. The unemployment rate for blacks in America as a whole, 16.9%. But for our children, black youth, now these are the people, you know, we can extend this to college students and certainly for those at 15 and above. So this would be a category list for, let's say, from 16 to maybe 25, maybe even pushing into 30. The unemployment rate is over 41%. Over 41% for our young people. And so when we look at the different things that are going on, when we talk about crime and activity of our youth in the streets, and we understand that there are not opportunities out there for them, and that this is a worsening condition where even those with PhDs today are finding it difficult to find employment, we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to just die? Or are we going to pick up the necessary tools and do the necessary actions that are needed for our survival? Black men, 17.5% in terms of unemployment, and black women, 13.4%. So we need to now look in the mirror, and we need to all understand that we are being affected as an entire people economically. Many of us went into business, many of us are in business to some degree, but the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as Brother Vernon said in program, in position and program, he said, unify and do for self. Unify and do for self. So it is that unified effort that is needed in order for us to come out of this present day condition, to ward off those things that Dr. Anderson said were coming down upon us, to ward off those things that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have been teaching us are underway as to our demise. These are real statistics that we're looking at. Now, in answer to your question about education, Dr. Conrad Worrell in the Final Call newspaper just a couple of issues ago, I believe, wrote an article. And in that article, he talked about the important link between economics and education. We've been taught and we know that America is actually dumbing down the people. Now, that's everybody, not just black people, but they're dumbing down the population of the people. And they're doing this so that the people can be more easily exploited. So the question is, to answer your question rather, we have to begin to combine the efforts of economic and education together to ensure that our children have the necessary resources and receive the proper education in order for us to move forward. If we don't put money and resources behind the education of our children, then we will continue to lose generation upon generation of our children. They will be lost. America is not funding a proper education for us. we must begin to fund it ourselves. And it is only through the development of economics and business that we can begin to do that.
Yes, sir. Okay, let me check the phone lines. Brother Caesar, is there any questions right now?
No, ma'am.
Okay, all right, well, we're going to move on. And thank you, Brother Camus, for answering that question. Okay, so either one of you can answer this. As the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has called for the FOI to take to the streets to show a strong wall or essence of love and care in the community, are we also teaching cooperative economics and do-for-self in our conversations? And the reason why I ask that question is because I am a juvenile court advocate, and that means that I go to court for children who are borderline getting ready to go to prison. In the state of Texas, you can actually go to prison at age 15. And oftentimes I do a measure of intervention and offer additional programs as an option out for prison. And, you know, some of these children are sentenced for criminal activity like pharmaceutical street sales. You know, some of them may get little sentences for like to boot camp, not prison, but for graffiti and things of that nature. But if you have ever, and not that you want to see this, but if you have ever watched a young man or a young woman even sell drugs on the street, it is amazing how they are so skilled. Because if you know the history of it, where they're buying wholesale and they're selling retail, and then they're reaping, you know, their profit, and then they go and they re-up, as they say, and come back and do it again and turn the money over, as they say. You know, are we really talking to them about cooperative economics? And I'm not saying in that business, but I'm saying that some of them have these abilities that appear to come natural, and instead of them selling a product of that nature, they can actually take those same skills and actually do business for themselves, just selling another product. So are we actually talking to them on the street, Brother Vernon?
You know, Sister Gidget, it's interesting that you raised that question right now, because I've been studying the article that was in the not the most recent, but the last issue of The Final Call, the article that was written by Minister Louis Farrakhan. And this particular section speaks directly to that. He talks about the economic condition and what's going on in our community, and he marries that to the fact, he marries the violence and the crime to the fact that economics is not present as a strong force in our community. And with reference to we going out into the streets and the army of men that he's pulled together to go into the streets, he refers to them in this article as an army that does not go seeking violent confrontation with the drug boys in our community, because we were once like they. And so we say, there but for the grace and intervention of God go I. And then it takes a turn and something so beautiful happens in this article. It says, that's why we are successful. What wins is a nonviolent army of love going into a housing project trained against the grain, not to kill your people, but to love your people. Not to go 1 mile with them, but to go two. And the prerequisite, okay, the groundwork that needs to be laid before we can really put the art of conversation into practice with our young brothers and sisters that are in our community, is to make sure that we go in the name of love, treat them the way that we would want to be treated, open our hearts and open our minds and our arms to our people. And once we lay that fertile ground, then we can start building on that. We've got to put first things first and establish the right relationship. Once we do that, then we can bring the power in that needs to be brought in.
Yes, sir. Okay, Brother Ron, I'm sorry. I'm hearing from Nas, DJ Black Caesar. You know where that's coming from?
No, ma'am.
Okay, I hope I'm not hearing things. Okay. Okay.
sounds like fun.
Okay. Brother Kamos, can you answer that same question about the youth and their capabilities and what they can actually use those skills to do now in a more positive manner?
Yes, ma'am. You know, we used to in Baltimore, before this great call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan came out, periodically we would go out into the communities, go out into the projects often, and we would set up and we would have a showing of a lecture by the minister. And oftentimes when we were out there, you know, the sisters would come out quite often and sit down and begin to watch, and then the young brothers would come out as well. But they were engaged, you know, in that activity. They would move it away from us. But then they would come over to us and they would ask us, brothers, do y'all have any jobs? You know, they would ask that question. You know, our young people do not want to be engaged in illegal criminal activity. They really don't want to do that. And as you said, Sister Gidget, our people, our children are some of the most talented children. These are young people without MBA degrees who, you know, some of them build massive empires of wealth, albeit in the criminal way or in the streets. But they have the mental capacity to do that. The problem is we know that this system is systemic in terms of its desire to bar us as much as possible from opportunities that would allow us to really move forward, that would allow us to do well and to use our skills, gifts, and talents in a way that would be beneficial to ourselves. It would rather us do things that would cause us to end up into the prison industrial complex system. And so to answer your question, absolutely our skills and talents of our youth, we have to find ways to hone those in the right direction. And so what the minister has now called the mighty FOI out into the street to do, to go and get our people, is absolutely 100% on point. And it is something, as Brother Vernon said, that we need to be doing, going out and showing our people that we love them. But in that call that the minister made on that Tuesday night, at the end of his lecture, he said that we needed to be developing something for our people. He said, quoting the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that the mosque should become the employment center for our people. He said, we must have something for our people to come into. And so it is our responsibility, again, looking in the mirror as conscious people, of those of us who say we have knowledge, it is our responsibility to build institutions, not just business, small business, but we're talking institution of a high level now that will have the capacity and power to employ our people, that can put the skill sets of young people who come out of college, who have some knowledge that they gain coming out of college, that they might not have to necessarily go work for the enemies, but they can come work in our business and take that skill and knowledge that they're gaining through their education and put it right to work in building institutions that economically will help us to grow and to flourish as a people. That's what we have to do. That's what the fulfillment of the call, or you could say the moving forward of the call, and it falls right in line with what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is going to be presenting, as he has already presented it and entitled it, Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Ending Poverty and Want. So yes, Sister Gidget, this plan and this movement that we are in is a full circle movement. The minister is certainly the wisest among us. And so he knows we have to go after the spiritual nature of our people first, but immediately after raising up the people spiritually, we have to have something for them. These children, their fathers, the mothers, they have to eat. And a man or a woman who cannot find food to eat will not be concentrated or stay concentrated spiritually and come to the mosque or worry about building that thing when they have nothing to eat. So we must build economic resources, and we must have an economic resolution and solution to the problems that are affecting our people overall.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to get DJ Black Caesar to play us a song, and we're going to come back. And you know I have some more questions for you, gentlemen, of course. DJ Black Caesar, can we get a jam in?
Sister Gidget, we have a question from 443. Go ahead, 443, and ask your question. Your mic is on.
Hello?
Yes?
Assalamu
alaikum.
Go ahead and ask your question, sir.
This is Brother Chance. I just wanted to let you know who I was, and I was just also involved with economic development, working with the ABP group. I'm familiar with Brother Vernon. How you doing, Brother Vernon? Good. Good to hear from y'all. I'm glad you have the program. And I just wanted to, you know, let you all know that I was listening.
I'm great, my brother. I'm great. Good to hear from you.
Good. And I just want to let you know that I was listening and everything, and this is something definitely we need to do. I'm doing the network, and I'm interested in networking and trying to do something with anybody in our community in terms of raising funds so that we can actually fund businesses. That's what I'm all about doing. And I just wanted to ask you a question about the 3-year economic plan and how you think that we could develop the, or help to make proposals where we can utilize the 3-year economic plan as a capital reserve to help us to be able to generate small businesses in our community.
Okay, brother. K-Mo, do you want to answer the question?
Well, the 3-year economic plan is certainly made for us to begin to pool our resources together in a unified fashion from a perspective of a mass pooling of those resources. And it's done in such a way that if, for example, $10 or $20 or $30 a month is sent in to a national treasury of sorts that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have called for, then that money being pooled can be used to begin to gather and capture the type of resources and types of things that we need. Of course, with the 3-year economic program, one of the primary things which absolutely makes the absolute greatest sense that we need to purchase is land. Because land, from land, all other resources emanate from. Now, more directly to your question about how funds can be pooled together and used toward the development of businesses, I myself, brother, and you calling from a 443 number, that means you must be somewhere in the Maryland area. So I'm right here with you in the city of Baltimore, and we certainly can get together after the show sometime and really talk. I have a background in commercial finance and banking and so forth, and myself and a number of other individuals have been talking over the years about the need to develop some sort of entity that would deal directly with the biggest problem that exists among black businesses, which is the lack of capital. And so if that's along the way that you're thinking, along the lines that you're thinking, we should do that, and any of the other persons out in the listening audience who are involved in some way in finance or have a knowledge base of finance, we should be getting together in developing think tanks and developing dialogue groups to really look at that problem and begin to develop ways and mechanisms to resolve it, because capital is needed in every business. There's no business in the United States of America or anywhere else in the world that is a great business without capital, without people investing in the business, without people buying its products. It would not simply exist. And so there is no spookism to this at all. Every business needs capital. And so, brother, that's an excellent idea if that's something you're working on. And I would love to talk to you in more detail about what you're currently doing and what others have put forth as general ideas, because that is something we absolutely must address.
Okay, brother, did he answer your question? Is the caller still with us, Caesar?
Yes, he is.
Sir, maybe he has his phone on mute.
Yeah, I
have
his phone on mute.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'm sorry about that. Yes, I would definitely like to get together and network, see how we can work something out. I mean, I spoke, Brother Vernon and I, we spoke briefly on some things, and I would like to definitely network with you all. I am in the area. However, I live in Hagerstown. I used to live right in Baltimore, but I moved out to Hagerstown, Maryland. And like I said, you know, I'm interested in doing some networking and raising some funds to help other small businesses get into activity by being an investor in those businesses. And that's what we need to create. Because one thing that I've learned by my research in that, in the black community, One thing about our businesses, being in business in the black community, that's different than other communities is that those other communities have venture capitalists. They have lending apparatuses, and some of them have lending apparatuses where they don't even have interest being charged. So we can do those type of things with ourselves. This is actually our custom in Islam to not do and not have interest, and we can develop those kinds of things ourselves and raise funds, hopefully by using, you know, our national resources that we're developing, that we can be able to actually generate a kind of economic system of our own.
Absolutely, brother. If I would, that is exactly what the economic freedom movement is all about. Freedom Paper Company is a valuable and viable, important part of that movement, and we're going to get into some of that. And what you're saying is very key, though. It takes me into something I want to talk about, but to what brother is saying, and I just want to talk about this because we have to ask, as brother said on the national hookup today, we have to ask the question, why? Why is it that we don't have these things such as a national bank? Why is it that although the call for the three-year economic program has been given for years upon years, we have not really garnished our strength and power to run to the call? Why are we not answering the call? Why is it that today in 2012, those of us who say we are conscious, those of us who say we follow the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, those of us who say we're with the program of Marcus Garvey, those who say we're with Malcolm X and in his movement, those who say we follow Kwame Ture and all the other great worthies, why is it that we don't pool our resources? Why is it that we don't spend our dollars with black self and kind? Now, our Latino brothers and sisters, they do that. Our Korean brothers and sisters, they do that. And to brother's point, in the Korean community, it is a well-known fact, for example, that in terms of capital, that at this point, they really don't go to what you would call national banks unless they're talking huge sums of money. They don't do that. They pool the resources within themselves. Even our brothers who come over from the continent have a practice called susu, and that is a practice where people come together and share resources and wealth among themselves, passing those resources among themselves. But we know that there's some things that have happened to the black man and woman in particular in America that take us away from that which we should do naturally. I want to read a quote, Sister Gidget, a couple of quotes if I can real quick. One coming out of Message to the Black Man, page 174. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, the white man spends money with his own kind, which is natural. Let me read that one more time. The white man spends money with his own kind, which is natural. You too must do this. Help to make jobs for your own kind. Take a lesson from the Chinese and Japanese. Give employment and assistance to your own kind when they are in need. This is the first law of nature. Defend and support your own kind. And he goes on to say, true Muslims do this. So any Muslim who is listening to this today, and we're calling again for the economic challenge, if we don't take up the challenge and we say we're Muslims, are we really? See, these words I just read came out of the mouth of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They're not my words. They're his words. He said true Muslims do this. True Muslims support their own. Now, this is not to say we're not going to do business with other people. That would be insanity. We wouldn't do that. But it is to say that it is natural, and it can be proven in no limit of time, that all other people come unto themselves, and all other people have a springboard, if you will, in their own community to get up and get started among themselves, and then they go out into the broader spectrum community and become more and more successful. What is it that hinders us from doing this? In that book, Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews, I want to just read a quick couple of sentences out of page 232. Now, some of the things we must understand that have happened to us have programmed us to act like we do. But again, if we are conscious, if we are knowledgeable, if we have any wisdom, then we can no longer have an excuse, because knowledge of these things must set us free and begin to motivate and move us toward the action that is, again, natural toward our own survival. If we love ourselves, looking in the mirror, if we love our people, if we love our wives, if we love our husbands and our children, then we must begin to do what is natural without excuse, because there is no excuse relevant to your own demise and destruction. There's no excuse. Now, it says here, talking about the laws, the Jim Crow laws specifically, that existed during that era of Jim Crow. It says such laws included proscriptions against black land ownership, effectively criminalized the development of a black mercantile or business class, and further undermined any challenge to the free flow of black dollars. So we have been trained, because of even laws being put into place, where we were trained and programmed not to do business with self and kind. It was a criminal offense under the Jim Crow era, in the Jim Crow era, and under those laws, for a black man or woman to do business with another black man or woman without a Caucasian being in the middle of the transaction. Now, it goes on to say, Yale sociologist John Dillard revealed in his Caste and Class in a Southern Town that whites routinely discredited the reliability of Negro professional people or merchants in their effort to undermine the development of an independent black middle class. So some of these stereotypes that we today in 2012, even those of us who claim to be conscious, we still hold on to those stereotypes that are demining and undermining us as a people, when we say that black people's business is not as good as others, when we say that our products are not as good as others, when we hold each other to a higher standard than we do other businesses that we go into, we are being victims of a sociological attempt to demise ourselves. We were taught and trained that those of us who had businesses and who were professionals were not good enough. And we were taught and trained to go do business with everybody else except ourselves. So we're calling today, we're challenging those of us who say we're conscious, who should be the shining light and example for those who are not knowledgeable, to do what we know is natural today without excuse. And when we find a problem with a black business, we is then our responsibility to enlighten the brother or sister in how to improve. There is no longer an excuse to do other than support black self and kind. To do so is treasonous, to do so is hypocrisy, and to do so is setting ourselves to death.
Yes, sir. All right, Brother K-Mos. All right, you're teaching hard now. Okay.
All praise be to Allah.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, I hope the brother got an answer to his question. Are there any more questions, Brother Caesar?
Let's see. No, ma'am. That was it.
Okay. So, Brother K-Mos, I heard everything that you said, and it brought to mind about networking, because, you know, from my perspective, from my experience of being in the nation for over 40 years, I have seen us be a separate group, and it's still in some instances hard to unify us who are identified as Muslims in the nation of Islam. It's still hard to unify with our people across the board, because the first thing that they see is religion. But when we talk about doing business as a people, which we've all suffered under the laws of Jim Crow, and we've all suffered under the process of Willie Lynch, regardless of what faith we have clung on to or that we now claim, how can we better network with our own without putting the emphasis so much on religion? And the reason why I say this is because I grew up in Compton, but coming to Texas at a young age, what I saw was a transitional kind of era in Houston, Texas. There was a time, I assume, because this based on the landmarks that were around the community in which I grew up, there were a lot of black businesses in the area in which I live called the Third Ward. And in the late 70s, 80s, so to speak, we had an influx of foreign businesses. Here comes the cleaners. Here comes the convenience store. Here comes the I Buy, We Fry, whatever, on the corner. And there was just an influx of these Vietnamese merchants that actually took over the community. So when those buildings become vacant in our communities, how can we network together and remove the stigmatism of religion out of the equation and say, hey, let us as a people invest in this property on this block, let us buy this city block, and let us, you know, create businesses in our own community so that we can support one another, because that is a key factor as well. So how would you address that, Brother Kamos? And do we have a national black business network that everyone can access?
Well, so that is a very important question as to the why mentioned, as to why we don't do the things that we should do. And as you stated, quite often, and our enemies have, again, taught us to do this, which is to allow very small things, things that are very unimportant, such as what religion we are, to interfere with the natural nature of what we should be doing collectively as a people. See, you know, as Malcolm X said, whether you are Baptist or whether you were a Muslim or whether you were a Protestant, a Jew, a Hebrew Israelite, or whether you were just an atheist, it didn't matter, because nobody pointed that out when they were whipping us, when they were sicking dogs on us, and when even now in 2012 they are assassinating us. Nobody asked our brother, our young brother Trayvon Martin, was he a Baptist, was he a Methodist, was he a Muslim? Nobody asked him that question when he was attacked by a villain, by an enemy who attacked him merely because he was a black man. A young black male who he looked at, and most importantly, Sister Gidget, we must understand that that attack is not just only because he was a black man, which that was part of it, but it is also because we are not valued. We have to learn to value ourselves. This is one of the reasons we do not do business with one another, and we go to other than self to do business, because we just don't value ourselves. But as long as we devalue and not value ourselves, guess what? No one else will value us. And so when that man came out to attack our brother, he thought nothing of it and felt that he could get away with it because he felt that he was killing a human being that had no value. And these types of things will continue to happen to us unless we gain a foothold of economic strength, and unless we, more importantly, even before that, gain value of ourselves. Now, we have to understand that in us building an economic reality, that there are a couple of things that we have to address. Number one, we got to educate the minds of the consumer and of the people. See, we have to do excellent business. I'm going to start with the business people. So if you're in business, it is your duty and my duty and responsibility to try to do the very best business that we can. Now, none of us are perfect, but we must strive to be excellent, and we must strive to be professional. In the Ministry of Trade and Commerce, one of the documents that we created was called the Business Code of Ethics, because we realized that what is hampering our people to a large degree is, again, something that was infused in us by the enemy, the slave traders. What was infused in us was a distrust of one another. And so we created the document called the National Business Code of Ethics. That can be found at www.nationaltradeandcommerce.org. You can go and actually read the actual document. This is the beginning of us. And see, what we're asking is that all business people adopt this document as your way of practice, as your way of doing business. And then we can begin to push out the stereotype, push out the things that have stopped us or that we have allowed to stop us from being proactive in doing business with each other. You know, we need to do just the thing that you said, Sister Gidget. We need to be going after those buildings. We need to be revitalizing our communities. But can we go to that level before we will do even the most simplest of things, like buying paper towels from Freedom Paper Company? Everybody uses paper towels. Paper towels. Paper towels. Now, what obstacle, what excuse, what real reason could we have not to buy paper towels or bathroom tissue? Are we not willing to sacrifice the smallest of things? Now, I want to say this, you know, because this is very important, Sister Gidget, that people understand about the growth of black business. If we're at the level of below zero economically, that's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dealing with a system of people who have robbed us and built wealth by slavery and enslaving our people and taking everything from us and then using, after slavery, Jim Crow to further extort us, right? And if we understand that that's the reality, then we must understand that we can't just jump out immediately and necessarily pound for pound, item for item, product for product, be able to contend with them. We have to be able to build ourselves up. But the question becomes, how can we ever build ourselves up if we never support ourselves? The ditch and the hole will continue to get deeper and deeper. As Brother Vernon said, Dr. Claude Anderson said, that the time is now coming where we will be a permanent underclass. So we got to make a decision. Are we willing to sacrifice the smallest of things today for our survival, for the survival of our children going forward? Can we sacrifice the smallest of things? And that's why this challenge is so, so very serious and important. We're seeing Freedom Paper Company as one business, and we're inviting other businesses to be a part of this and to adopt that code of ethics first so that our people know that we are standing on moral high ground, that we intend to be held accountable for our practices and what we do. See, we're offering great quality products at economic sound prices with Freedom Paper. But it does not compete with every single product on the market. We can't possibly do that going against Kimberly Clark and Georgia Pacific and Procter & Gamble. But we got to understand, when we support a company like Georgia Pacific, that we're supporting the Koch brothers. Now, you can go online for yourself and look up the Koch brothers and see what they do. You can go online and see how they spend their money. They're the second largest, most powerful company, privately owned, that is, in the country. Georgia Pacific is what they own. They make paper products. They make a number of other things. But look at where the money goes when we buy that product. Just go online and look up the Koch brothers, C-K-O-C-H. And see what they do. See where their money is spent. We have to understand, if we don't build businesses, then we can never secure an entire community. So I'm saying, if we won't buy bathroom tissue and paper towels, will we ever get to the point of really pooling our resources to build a community? Can we build trust in ourselves enough to do that, which is very seriously and urgently needed? And can we get beyond self-hatred enough to actually love each other enough to be able to even build communities that we want to live together among ourselves? This is what other groups do. They live among themselves, and they build from the strength of their own communities, and then they go out. We must come back to ourselves and love ourselves to build a great economic future through this economic freedom movement.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Brother Vernon.
Yes, ma'am. I'm right here.
Tell me something. How is the politics today really affecting the black community financially?
The politics of business or politics in general?
politics in general.
Oh. Something interesting is actually going on. I was listening to Roland Martin, Roland Martin on the Tom Joyner Morning Show a couple of mornings ago. And they were talking about in the state of California, I believe it was, how certain congressional districts are being redrawn in such a way that it puts longstanding members of the Congressional Black Caucus against one another. They in order for the next term of elections that are going on, they're going to be running against one another in some cases, in many cases. And in addition to putting long standing tenured black candidates against one another, various communities are being divided where instead of a stronghold or an opportunity for black and Latinos to come together on the political front, now because of redistricting and the way things are being drawn, that unity is being broken apart, where the black and Latino political candidates are or will be running against one another. So there's a game being played, and the rules are constantly being changed on us because we try to play by someone else's rules. Now, a set of rules, a game plan, a blueprint has been laid out for us by someone who had our best interest in mind and at heart, a blueprint where we begin to depend on ourselves, where we begin to look toward ourselves for the solutions to our problems, where we begin to work with ourselves within our own community, okay? We know that there's just about no state that you can go to, at least on the eastern and the western coast, where you won't find a Chinatown, where you won't find possibly a Little Italy, where you won't find a section or an enclave of town where you know that that is 100% Jewish. You know that you'll find certain sections of town where everybody else in those sections practices that. They have a community. They have a common unity that dictates how they live and how they operate. Okay? Politics without economics is symbol without substance. That's something that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, and since I've been able to vote for the last 20 years, I've seen that to be absolutely true. It doesn't matter who's in office. It doesn't matter how well you make your speech and kiss your babies. At the end of the day, each one of those people in office is beholden to somebody. So you can't divorce the two. You can't separate the two. Politics and economics have to go together. And the way to gain political power, especially as we're seeing with certain elections, races and things that are going on today, what the candidates are doing, if you have the financial muscle to throw behind candidates to further your political agenda, then you have what it takes to be successful. If you don't have the financial muscle to put behind, all you can do is sit back and be moved from one redistrict area to another. So the answer to your question is focus on economics, focus on the development of a real community. We don't have a community just because we happen to all be black. Okay, because if at the end of the day you go to your end of town and I go to my end of town, we don't see one another till next Sunday. That's not a community. Okay, just because we happen to get together on Monday night, that don't mean that this is a community. A community is when we make the decision to live together. I be your neighbor, you be my neighbor. You know where I live, I know where you live. And what you need, I put myself in a position to be able to provide for you. And what I need, you put yourself in a position to be able to provide for me. We look out for one another. We depend on one another. We keep one another strong and keep one another's back protected. That is the prerequisite for us to gain any type of real political power. Otherwise, the people who are doing that, they will control our politicians from now until kingdom come.
Sister Gidget, I just wanted to chime in on that question and say, first of all, you are so much on point this evening, and it is greatly appreciated the way that you are facilitating this show. I mean, the questions are right on point because, you know, the politics of things is so, so important when we think about economics. And as Brother Vernon was saying, you know, we need to really stop running from each other as a people. We need to run to each other because there's nothing else we can do that's going to save us today. We must have unity. As the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, righteousness and unity is going to be the things that save us. But I want us to, if we're paying attention to what's going on politically, and we're looking at what's being said by the candidates. Now, I'm neither a Democrat nor a Republican. I'm a theocrat. I believe in God rule. I believe in God rule. But we have to be cognizant and aware of what's going on around us and how it will potentially affect us. Certainly, it would be better to have President Barack Obama to be in office than Mitt Romney. That is an absolute fact. But let us look at what these people are actually saying and doing. When we look at the indication of what the platform of the Republican Party is, we clearly can see that either some of them are clearly totally insane, or that is something driving them well beyond what they claim. Because for anybody to want to follow the policies of somebody like Paul Ryan, who wants to totally dismantle what they call the social infrastructure of the country, be it Social Security, Medicaid, and these types of programs, somebody who wants to give tax breaks even more so to rich people, having them pay 1% or less of taxes, somebody who wants to take away things like food stamps for people that need them. We have to understand that this is the political environment that we're living in. So the question for us becomes, how do we deal with that? But more importantly, it's not just the vote that's important, because as Brother Vernon said, and quoting the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to have politics or politicians even, because we got many black politicians today, but to have that and not have economic power behind that is, as he stated, symbol without substance. We can't even fund a black political campaign well if we don't have economics and business. And so when our politicians need money to raise funds, who are they going to go to? If they can't come to us, they got to go to other people to get the money they need to run campaigns. So where does that leave us? Because we have to understand that he who writes your check, you owe something of allegiance to. You have to answer to them in some way. And that's why when we look at these multi-billionaires that are funding Mitt Romney and that campaign, what do they want? There's nobody in business that won't say that when they spend their money or make an investment, they're not expecting something. So what is the agenda that these people have? We know it is an agenda against the original people of the planet. We know it is directly an agenda against black people, Latino people, and people of color in general. We know that. So we have to be wise and build economics so that we can actually control politics. We've worked this thing backwards. We got politics before economics. We need economics before we even had politics. But now that we have politics, we just need to step back and build the economics so that we can make our political gains stronger when we want to do so.
So that leads me to ask why we have black politicians. But go ahead, Brother Caesar, you have a question?
Yeah, Brother Forrest has a question in the chat room. He wants to know, how do you get past the international racism discarding usual dogma, how to move money back into the local nationalities, international communities? He wants to know, how can you do that? Anybody want to answer that question?
Would you ask that question again, please?
Basically, what he wants to know is, how do you get past the international racism discarding the usual dogma? How to move money in our local, national, and international communities?
There's a part of that I'm missing. You said the usual dogma.
What?
How do you get past that?
Well, it might like a stigma, you know, like maybe something that is keeping us from working together, you know, with our own people and internationally. So I guess he's asking how we get past that stigmatism of not working together. And if
I wanted to hear the question clearly. I must have had some interference, but if I understand your question correctly, how do we get past that?
Right.
That has been a long-standing problem that many have been working to solve in our community and amongst in this nation as well as internationally. And one thing that I can recall right off the top of my head and hear echoing in my ears almost on the daily, especially right now as we're speaking about it, I hear the voice of Kwame Ture consistently saying, organize, organize, organize. You know, relationships need to be built within our community. Well, I just said we don't have community. We need to build community, establish relationships, and then organize those relationships, both at home and abroad. Never pass up an opportunity to network. Never pass up an opportunity to link arms with brothers and sisters who are in Africa or throughout the diaspora. Understand that we are one people no matter where on the planet we are. Those are your people in Brazil. Those are your people on the continent of Africa. Did you know we got black people in Russia? Those are your people. Never pass up an opportunity to network and establish relationships, build community. It's going to take work. It's going to take a generation that doesn't go for the okie doke, and you know, because we can get a position, newfound jobs, or political prowess. It's going to take a generation that forsakes all of that and says there's nothing more critical or more important than us forming a bond in unity that we can build from.
Sister Gibbs, if I can try to answer that question as well.
Sure.
What we do, brother, is we do exactly what we're calling for on this call. We take the challenge and we make no excuses anymore of doing with and for self. We determine first, and we make a determination that we, in a firm resolution, that we're going to spend our dollars with ourselves, that we're going to do business with ourselves, that we're going to go as far as we have to go or travel to do that we're going to assist and help our businesses to grow, that we're not going to allow anyone to stop that. If the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, who said this, he said race first. See, that's not being racist to say race first. That's being intelligent, because that's survival. And so when we make the determination that that's what we're going to do, then nothing can stop us. No dogma or no word from anybody who has something negative to say about anything that we're doing can stop us when we make that firm determination within ourselves that this is what we're going to do and this is what we're going to build. Now, I want to just say this, because there have to be checks and balances for this. In other words, in order for us to move forward economically, we have to be willing to impose upon ourselves checks and balances. As an example, a Korean merchant once told me that among their people, when they do come together and loan money to each other, or when they come together to build resources together, that they have a very strong code of ethics in the way that they deal with one another.
For example, if as a community they were to lend money to a particular group or to a particular person, and that person does not keep their word, or even if they fall short, they don't try to fix the situation or continue to do what they agreed upon, then they are exiled from the community. So, see, there is discipline built into the movement and the forward progression of us doing business together, so that we stop vultures that come in among us, wolves in sheep clothing that sometimes try to come in and take advantage. That's why we have this business code of ethics. We have to stop that type of behavior that causes further detriment to us building and uniting together. But we can allow no one and nothing to stop that ultimate unity that is necessary. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, and this is why it's so important, he said that our unity, the pooling together of our resources, would resolve 95% of our problems. Now, I don't know, but I need some of my problems resolved. So if that's what it's going to take to resolve 95% of our problems, what are we doing not doing what is needed for us to be successful and to create better lives for all of us?
Okay.
Sister Gidget, I think Brother Forrest is on the line. Brother Forrest, you out there?
Salam.
Salam.
Salam, sir.
I'm out,
Kareem.
Yes. I have not. Brother made so many excellent points. I got a few questions, but the question I initially asked was, how do we get past institutional racism and get past the dogma that we use? In the black community, we have a language, and it goes something like this. The white man is holding me back. I can't get a chance. I can't get ahead, blah, 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 blah. And then Brother kind of cleared up the point, because the key is our unity. So I really don't want to go back. That was my initial question, because we don't move money locally, nationally, and internationally. People don't understand that you can get a grant to to export your goods to another country. Government, and that's why politics is key to us having money, because politicians hold that golden rope or carrot out there, but they only give it to the people or put that money aside to those who support them during the election. And we have to become a little bit more political savvy in the business world to take advantage of that, because he who pays the piper calls the tune, and we have to remember that. So it's just like having a house. You got to put money to the side for food. You got to have electricity. You got to have cleaning products. But there's some things you got to have in the business world to move yourself forward or move your community forward. And one of those things is not the greatest thing. The greatest thing is what my brother said, is unity. But one of those smaller things out of that 95%, 5%, and that 5%, maybe 3%, is the political connections and having the politicians in your hip pocket, because you financially supported them as a group, you know. So that was my question, and that was my point. I'm loving the show. I was I'm sorry that I tried to do it on the internet, but it didn't come out quite right.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for asking the question, Brother Forrest, and thank you for listening. I didn't know you was out there.
Nation building for life, sister.
I love you, Brother Forrest.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We winding down. We only have maybe about 16 to 17 minutes. So I want to ask this question to either of you. Is the prison industry something that we as a people need to start looking into, since it seems that our white counterparts are building prisons at an astronomical rate, but we know who's populating the prisons? But on the business side of it, is that something that we should be looking into, Brother Vernon?
What do you mean looking into?
I mean, it's a business. I mean, you know, the way that They are building prisons now. And being a prison minister for over 5 years, I've kind of learned the inner workings of how that system works from state to state. And, you know, they're paid so much for an inmate. You know, they have these different contracts with these different companies, but then we know that the labor that is done in the prison is virtually free, and the only reason why it's not slavery is because they have assigned salaries to the inmates. When we talk about salaries, we're talking about 93 cents a day, 74 cents a day in some states. And what is happening is that not only the privatization of prisons by different corporations, or even in Texas, they have an individual that owns a prison facility that he's contracted from the state. And I'm saying that overall, it's big business. So, but what I have not heard is us as a people getting into that industry as a business. So what do you think about that?
I'll keep my language clean. I don't think that just because something is profitable or big business, I in no way think that black people should consider certain avenues for us to go in on. I don't advocate drugs just because I know that it's a $1 billion business. I don't advocate gentlemen's clubs because I know people are spending money on them. So I'm certainly not an advocate of us looking at becoming purveyors and owners in the prison industrial complex because it's big money. That is, in my opinion, that's the total wrong way to be going. We're trying to set our people free. We're trying to liberate and empower ourselves, not create bigger traps for them to fall into. So the name of this company is Freedom. And that's not by accident. We want freedom. We want a full and complete freedom. And we want the opportunity for all of black men and women of color who are in prison to have the opportunity for a new chance at life that can be given to them through the opportunities that we're seeing are possible to be developed now.
Okay. Brother Kamo, same question.
Yes, ma'am, I absolutely 1,000% echo my brother's comments, and I would go further to say this. You know, Allah would punish us severely if after having knowledge that we were to go and to become the exploiters of our people along with our enemies. We must never do any business whatsoever, whether it be investing in the prison industrial complex with destroying our brothers, destroying our sisters now at an alarming rate, destroying entire families, destroying the black community. And as you said, even though they pay a very minuscule salary, and maybe we shouldn't call it slavery, it would be indentured servitude, but let's just call it slavery anyway, because that's really what it is. And so we don't want to be like those of some of our forefathers who were along with our enemies and selling us into slavery. We should never do such a thing, nor should we be in businesses such as liquor stores or bars, or as Brother Vernon said, brothels or anything of any ill repute. The thing that the minister quotes, he says, righteousness and unity. Righteousness and unity will be the things that will save us. Sister Gidget, I'm wondering if in these last few moments, we can really focus a little bit about Freedom Paper Company in particular and this challenge that we're calling on. Would that be okay?
That's absolutely fine. But I want to say one thing about the prison system. The reason why I pose that question is because I hear what you're saying, and I don't negate that not one iota. But let me explain this to you, that as an owner of a prison, you have the right, and it's in the contract, to implement different programs, whereas you know that the white counterparts that own these businesses right now are not about the business of rehabilitating our people. You do have certain facilities that offer certain training and certain skills, but across the board, that is not the environment in which they are dwelling in. And I was, and maybe it's just me and my wicked mind, I don't know, but I was thinking that as an owner, someone that would contract a prison from the state, I would actually implement those programs to assure that our brothers and sisters don't come back to that system. And that's why I was considering that aspect of it, you know, not the negative part, but to enhance the quality of rehabilitation within the prison system to keep them from coming back, and so that some of these prisons that they're building to house our people who have made it a revolving door can then be closed down. So that was my point, and I just want to make that clear. But yes, sir, go ahead, Brother Kamo.
Well, I just want to say this, good sister. You certainly are a good sister, and we certainly don't think that came from any sort of wicked mindset. But it would sort of be like an immunization, you know, where when you get immunized, you take some of the poison and you put it into your system to supposedly protect you against the disease. So for us to actually do that would sort of be like that, in the sense that, you know, as a business, we would be in the same mind, have to at some point get to the mindset that we would have to fill those prisons up. Because as the minister has taught, there were some who made a decision in a maybe a smoke-filled room that made a decision that they wanted to fill up these prisons. So it would better behoove us to catch our young people in school and to better educate them so that they don't get caught up in the criminal injustice system at all that is the revolving door to their detriment. And then maybe build programs, maybe even halfway houses or other programs that they are coming out of these systems, and we can put them right into training programs and the like. And that really brings us to Freedom Paper Company anyway, because one of the things that Freedom Paper Company wants to do is to do those very things, to make a way for a brother or a sister who is coming out of prison to find an economic resolve and a way for them to make money, honestly, to be even in business. So at one point you stated that some of our young people have shown, because of what they've been able to build in the streets, that they have great intellect, that they have great abilities, that they're business managers, that they're sales and marketing people, but they've never been trained how to do it the right way. Well, Freedom Paper Company wants to do that. We want to take those people who may not be able to find a decent job because of a criminal background, and we're giving them the opportunity to become business owners first and foremost. But as the company continues to grow, we're going to offer even more job opportunities in sales, job opportunities in driving trucks and delivery positions, and job opportunities working in warehouse facilities. So all of these things can be done with Freedom Paper Company. But none of that can ever exist, or it will take an elongated amount of time for it to exist, if we don't do the key thing that every other community does, which is to support our own. So we're asking for six months, and we've asked this question in many venues. We asked the question, do you buy bathroom tissue? And nobody has said no yet. We ask the question, do you buy paper towels? And nobody has said no yet. We're saying buy from us. Our product can be proven to be more economical than almost any other product on the market today. Our product can be proven to be more or just better quality, or at least equal quality to most everything else that's out there. And even if you say, well, I need an ultra soft bathroom tissue, and we say, well, we don't have an ultra soft, ours is soft, but it's not ultra soft, then what prohibits us then from buying the paper towels? What excuse will we make for that? And then if you really want us to have another particular product, then support us where we are for 6 months, and we promise you that we will grow and have the type of products that you want. But we can never do that without us combining. I want to, Sister Gidget, read a couple of testimonials, because I don't want people to think that we're making anything up when we talk about the quality of Freedom Paper products. I don't want people to think that this is some mom-and-pop type of business. We are currently a national corporation that, by Allah's grace and permission, has grown to be such in just 8 months. And in just 8 months, we have grown from just a small group or entity at a corporate base to now 18 distributors in 13 states. We have grown from just two Hallmark products of bathroom tissue, Freedom Triple Mega 500, which gives you 500 sheets per roll, instead of what we're cut. Go look at the rolls that you're buying right now. Go, everybody, go get out the mirror now and go look at the roll of tissue you're buying. Most of it, on average, is 242 sheets or less. Sometimes it may be 300, but on average, 242 sheets. We're giving you 500 sheets of product for less money. So it's more economical, and it's a great quality paper. Let me read this from our brother in Chicago, Brother Dr. Robert Muhammad, who is a chiropractor in Chicago. He writes, "Assalamu alaikum. I'm very thankful to Allah to have the opportunity to support the efforts of Brother Kemos Muhammad in establishing a company that produces paper towels," and he says toilet paper, but we call it bathroom tissue, "that rivals the efforts of those businesses that have cornered the market. Using the paper towels for several months, and I'm very pleased with the quality of the product. I purchased the case several months ago and used them for my home as well as for my office. These paper towels lasted an extraordinary length of time due to its thickness and ability to absorb. I will continue to purchase my paper towels and toilet paper, bathroom tissue, from the Freedom Paper Company, and I encourage everyone who desires freedom to do the same. Thanks for producing that which we all need. Respectfully, Brother Robert J. Muhammad." I have one more. This sister Wanda 2X from Baltimore, Maryland says, "When my family and I used the paper, we were surprised at how long the towels lasted. They were economical, and though they seem to have cost a little more, they were well worth the price. They clean up the spills with little effort, and I would gladly recommend Freedom Paper to all households." These are just two letters, but we get these kinds of responses from our products all the time, from business people, from people who are using them on a household basis. And so I ask again, the two brothers that came on the line, I'm asking you two brothers to go online to www.freedompapercompany.com and order your Freedom Paper today. If you live, when you go online and look at the website, you will see a listing of where our current distributors are. There may be a distributor locally located to you that will deliver to you and bring it to your door. We give quality service of our products. We have stores. We have a store in Chicago, the Root for Life, that the product can be bought from. We have a store that's coming up in Greenville, Mississippi, that you can go to and get the products. It's online. So I'm saying let's move away from just the lip service. All that we've talked about tonight is absolutely poignant, absolutely on point, absolutely critical to our survival. But if we actually do not take an action today, if tomorrow we go right to Walgreens or Walmart and keep spending our money with them, especially for these products, which we're offering nationally now, then all of this has been a waste. And we're hypocrites to that which we say we believe in. I'm asking us today, Sister Gidget, Brother Vernon, to the listening audience, to everybody, to the Freedom Paper family, I'm saying we need to go out and get this product. Let's start for 6 months and watch us put monies into our organizations. Sister Gidget, we're doing a wonderful program right now. I'm going to just go ahead and put it out there with our great brother Donnie Muhammad in North Carolina, in Raleigh, North Carolina. Brother Donnie owns a charter school. He's educating the minds of our young people. There was a young brother Brother Jaleel, who was recently in Chicago. He works at the school. He was on the Tuesday night webcast with the minister, and the minister was talking about the brother who has a master's degree at 23 years old. He's helping at Brother Donnie's school to educate our children. Well, Freedom Paper Company, we have organizational incentives, and we have a program and a plan to benefit our schools, to put dollars in our schools, to provide scholarships for our babies, for our students, to buy computers, to buy books for our children and our students. That's what Freedom Paper Company is doing. That's what your dollars are going toward. It's not just filling up our pockets. It's going toward benefiting our community. You can invest in the company, and you can grow with us. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that we must become owners of the companies we consume from today. He says that in Torchlight to America. We must do this today. We must no longer just talk about it, but as Brother Vernon said, we must be about it. That's what we need to do, and that's what Freedom Paper Company is all about.
Okay, Brother Kamos, thank you. And we are really out of time. I think we have an extra couple of minutes maybe on the show. Brother Kamos, thank you, thank you, thank you. Wonderful presentation, Brother Vernon. Love you much, you know that. Thank you so much. And it was my pleasure, it was my honor to have you all back again. I would like to say thank you to the listening audience and for the callers who called in. I just want to run down the schedule of our shows. Join us on Tuesday night, the Real FOI. This week it's going to be Prison Life on the Inside Part 2, hosted by Richard Muhammad. On Wednesday, DJ Black Caesar and Sister Bianna are going to do their show, and I know they're going to have some new musical artists on there as well as their music. On Thursday, I'll be back. I don't know what I'm going to talk about yet, but I'll be back. On Saturday, we're going to have Brother Forrest and Sister Rafika and Brother James doing the keys, the seven keys to success. And, of course, next Sunday at 6:30 p.m., we will be back. Brother Vernon, Brother Kamos, assalamu alaikum. May Allah continue to bless you in your endeavors. And thank you so much for coming on Nations Radio tonight.
Thank you so much, my dear sister.
Thank you.
Walaikum salam.
Assalamu alaikum.